the health of the ocean, the health of the planet is what we're talking about with Dr. Helen Caldicott, who says that the situation at the Japanese nuke plant is dire, that it is something that could affect all of us, everyone in the Northern Hemisphere anyway, and that we'd better pay attention because this is going to be going on for a long time, poisoning our planet for perhaps 50 years or more. In a moment, we'll return. I'll ask a couple of more questions about the nuclear industry in general. Then we'll take your calls for my guest, Dr. Helen Caldicott. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. 2 days ago, we had an earthquake reported off the coast of Japan, 7.6 on the Richter scale. Dr. Caldicott, when you saw the news of that, were you holding your breath?
I was worried. It was a couple of hundred miles offshore, mind you, not right at the reactor itself, but I was nevertheless worried. And it's still not clear whether any damage was done to the reactors or to the tanks and their plastic piping and duct tape. We'll find out. TEPCO is not very assiduously monitoring the situation, and they only come out with information and data days later. So we'll wait and see.
You know, I can see somebody saying, what's the big deal? All this proves, it doesn't prove nuclear power is dangerous. It says it doesn't prove we shouldn't build nuclear plants. It just means we shouldn't build nuclear plants on an earthquake zone in a tsunami area. What do you say to that?
I think those people are pretty stupid. The fact is that global warming is antithetical to the safe functioning of nuclear power. I said that each reactor requires 1 million gallons a minute to keep it cool. Indeed, during a hot summer in France recently, the river levels dropped where the reactors were located, and the water was too hot to cool the reactors, so they had to close the reactors down. Meanwhile, great storms are occurring around the coast. Many reactors are, of course, built at ocean levels around the coast. As the sea rises, plus huge storms, it's quite possible that the control rooms of these reactors could be flooded, leading to a meltdown. And, you know, they're all open to terrorist attacks and the like. They only operate for 40 years. And as someone said recently, to decrease the CO2 level in the atmosphere by 10%, you would have to triple the number of nuclear reactors in the world today, and there are about 440, all of which are reaching the end of their lives, all of which are frightfully expensive to reproduce and build new ones, despite the turn on by the nuclear industry saying we'll have small modular reactors that are safe and burn waste, which is a lie. If you want to know about that, I'll go into it. But nuclear is dead on its feet. The fact is that renewables like wind and solar are becoming so cheap, and the technology is becoming cheaper and cheaper by the day, and many people are investing in it. What should happen is, instead of the American government spending over $1 trillion on weapons and killing, let's be frank, with the Pentagon, they should transfer that money to saving the planet. The true national security issue is whether or not our grandchildren will survive. It's going to be predicted to be 6 degrees centigrade hotter by the end of the century, which is antithetical to life. People cannot live at those temperatures. And it's not just 1 6 degrees. I mean, temperatures go up and down and fluctuate, so it could even be 10 degrees hotter, some days. So where the real national and international security issue is global warming, the ever-present threat of nuclear war, because Russia and America, who own 94% of the 20,000 nuclear weapons in the world, still target each other with over 1,000 each. And all your cities and towns are targeted with at least one hydrogen bomb. There are about 30 targeted on New York as I speak by the Russians. So nuclear war could occur tonight by an accident, by a hacker hacking into the early warning system, by computer error, by human error, or by international anxiety, say if Israel attacks Iran with a nuclear weapon, or there's another 9/11 attack where no one knew what was happening, and America went on to the highest state of nuclear alert just before the button's pressed. So we are still facing the ever-present threat of nuclear war and global annihilation, number one. We're facing the threat of nuclear power plants, whether or not they melt down from the nuclear waste, which over time will induce epidemics of cancer, leukemia and genetic disease, and the ever-present threat of global warming. We can fix two of those. We can eliminate nuclear weapons if Russia and America have the courage and audacity to take the lead, number one, and to show the world what wise countries can do. Number two, we can stop burning fossil fuel now and cover every house in America with solar panels, every parking lot with solar panels, so we all drive electric cars which are solar powered, have windmills everywhere, upgrade the grid, have a computerized grid so when the sun's not shining we get wind from the windmills power, etc. As for nuclear waste, I'm sorry, but I think that we will never find a solution to that, and that's the real wickedness that's going on.
I read a scenario, in fact, a guest we had on the program some time ago talked about U.S. nuclear plants, a scenario with some sort of an EMP situation or a solar flare that knocks out the grid in this country. If you knock out the grid, you have transportation problems. You wouldn't have trucks being able to get to nuclear plants to deliver fuel to keep the pumps going, and you could have a whole bunch of meltdowns. I mean, is that a realistic scenario?
Yeah, if a hydrogen bomb is exploded in space, the EMP or electromagnetic pulse is so profound it would knock out the electricity of six western states of the U.S. That's a big area. And therefore, no electricity to power the pumps, just like Fukushima, and then you get meltdowns all over the place. That's absolutely true. Or a cascading effect like happened a few years ago. Some tree fell on a power line in the Midwest and the cascading effect affected power supply to the eastern states and New York and the like. And they took ages to work out what happened there. We're at the mercy of all sorts of natural occurrences or human-induced scenarios. I mean, let's face it, if the Second World War was fought today in Europe, Europe would be uninhabitable for the rest of time because it's covered with nuclear reactors. It'd be so radioactive no one could ever live there again. Therefore, wars can only be fought in developing countries with no nuclear power plants. That's the first thing. The second thing, a nuclear power plant is a bomb factory. It manufactures 500 pounds of plutonium a year. Plutonium has a half-life of 24,400 years. It lasts for half a million years. You only need 5 pounds to make yourself a nuclear weapon. So any country with a nuclear power plant can make, 500 bombs a year if it wants, and that's for the rest of time. So America's selling them to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and, to tyrant countries. Not that America isn't a tyrant country itself, along with Russia holding the world at nuclear ransom every second of every day. It's amazing to me how hypocritical countries can be and how they project their dark side out onto other countries rather than, as Jesus said, see not the mote in the other person's eye, look instead for the mote in your own eye and develop humility and wisdom and sagaciousness.
Well, I think you'd have an easier time fixing the situation at Fukushima than waiting for that. Have there been any...
Oh, I don't agree with that. I helped to lead a revolution in America called the Nuclear Weapons Freeze in the 80s where I was an alien, a woman. I recruited 23,000 physicians to an organization called Physicians for Social Responsibility, and we started to educate people about the medical effects of nuclear war. And when I first went to America in 78, almost every person I spoke to said, well, it's better to be dead than red. And I thought, this is psychotic. They'd rather be killed in a nuclear war than be a communist. So we started having symposia all around the country about the medical effects of nuclear war. And journalists would say, what are doctors talking about this for? This is a political issue. We said, no, nuclear war will create the final epidemic of the human race. And in 5 years, and I had a lot of exposure on television because I had a Hollywood agent who put me on 60 Minutes and all sorts of programs. And in 5 years, 80% of people were opposed to nuclear war and the concept of nuclear war. The film The Day After was made because of our activities. And I met with Reagan in the White House and we met with Gorbachev and the Cold War came to an end in 89. That was the second American Revolution, and it certainly can happen. We can eliminate nuclear weapons. We can, if we want our grandchildren to have a future.
Let's talk about nuclear power plants again.
And we make sure they clean their teeth and have their immunizations, but don't care if they don't have a future, then they're doomed.
Well, I agree with you. And let's talk about the situation in Japan. Are there any engineering solutions that might work? Could you cover the thing with concrete? Could you, is there, put a dome over it? I mean, I'm sort of being facetious, but I would think that the folks at Bechtel must have some idea in mind. And even though they haven't been invited in, that they would want to drop a dime and call somebody in Japan and say, hey, we've got an idea that might work. Is there anything that might work?
Yes, it's a very good question. TEPCO, in its ignorance, and I may say stupidity, put a wall, a concrete wall, between the reactors and the ocean to prevent the water coming down from the mountain, draining into the ocean. But guess what? It acted as a dam, and the water quickly superseded and flowed over the top of the dam. So that made the situation worse. What Arnie Gundersen suggests is that you build a 2-meter-long wall of zeolite, which absorbs cesium, some distance from the reactors towards the mountain. And so that stops the radioactive water under the reactors mixing with the mountain water. And then you put a whole engineering situation of pipes and tunnels to divert the water coming from the mountain around the wall and into the ocean so it's clean water. He said that could be done, and he suggested that. Meanwhile, TEPCO, in a crazy notion, wants to build an ice wall around the reactor, but it would have to operate for 50 years if the electricity, like refrigeration tubes going into the ground like 100 feet and forming ice in the earth that prevents the water from getting to the other side. But, you know, if there's a power failure, the ice will melt. It would require a hell of a lot of electricity, huge amounts of global warming gas generated. And the solution you just came up with was they could, in fact, remove a lot of the buildings, the height of the buildings, where the damage caused are, and, yeah, fill it all up with concrete, three of them, units 1, 2, and 3. Unit 4 is a much more problematic situation, as I previously described. So that's a possibility. It will not fix the situation, and in 100 years, those cores will be intensely radioactive still, and the water will still be flowing through them. So I don't know. I mean, they're the only solutions I've read about or heard about.
I want to ask you another question about the scenario you raised about if it hits the fan and something happens, you would call your family in Boston and tell them to get to the Southern Hemisphere. I'm having that in my head, and I'm thinking, yeah, I would do the same thing. But the reality of so many people fleeing the north for the south is it'd be a nightmare.
Billions of people. Absolutely.
And I'm not sure that the host countries would be all that cooperative.
Well, Australia's not even letting refugees come from Iraq and Afghanistan, and where we've been bombing the hell out of them, to come here. We're a very racist country. So, I think that would be, it's a physical impossibility. What really staggers me is that, you know, we've come to rely on modern medicine, and we've done wonderful things. We cure things that, when I was a medical student, patients just died. And, you know, you had a headache, you take a Tylenol, you have this, you do this. And there's usually a pill for what you need. And what people don't understand is that if you are eating radioactive food, there's nothing to take to get the radiation out of your body, that there is no cure for this. And I understand the difficulty people have in accepting that fact, but it's the truth. There is nothing we can do.
So if somebody tells you to take iodine or something, it's not going to make...
That is the one thing we can do. If there is a meltdown and it's near you, and you know it's occurring because you won't know because they don't usually tell you for days, by which time you've breathed in the radiation cloud as it's flown over you. But if you know it's happening, before the radiation gets to you, you take a potassium iodide tablet, inert iodine, and you only take one. It supersaturates the thyroid, so the thyroid will not take up the radioactive iodine. Well, it protects it to 70%, so it does take some up. Also, cesium concentrates in thyroid as well, and you can't block cesium uptake. But it doesn't stop radiation going to all the other organs of the body, brain, spleen, liver, bone marrow, testicles, ovaries, you name it.
Helen, we're going to go to a break here in about 2 minutes. Have you? I know you've written papers about Fukushima. Have you written a book?
No, but I held a conference in New York at the New York Academy of Medicine in March, the second anniversary, for 2 days, called "The Medical and Ecological Consequences of Fukushima," with the leading scientists in the world presenting the very latest data on humans and disease and ecology and stuff. That now has been converted into a book by the New Press called Crisis Without End. Crisis Without End, which will be published, I hope, fairly early next year. And it is a sort of a Bible, an encyclopedia, if you will, of the very latest scientific data that is now available about Fukushima.
Is there some place that people could read your papers on this?
Go to my website, HelenCaldicottFoundation.org. You can download that whole symposium and listen to it. And soon the whole transcript will be on that webpage, so you can read the transcript of the original presentation.
Well, good. We're going to have links on our website to your website. I know you've written previous books, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, and another book called Loving This Planet that I would assume explore some of these same themes, even if they were written before the Japanese disaster happened. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually a series of interviews I did on my radio program with all sorts of fascinating people all around the world, like do cell phones cause brain cancer and all sorts of fascinating stuff. There's another book called If You Love This Planet that deals with global warming and nuclear power and toxic pollution and plastics and the whole thing, yeah. If you go to my webpage, HelenCaldicott.com, all my books are listed on that webpage.
Of course, global warming, climate change, that presses a whole bunch of different buttons, and it automatically makes people defensive because it's, I'm sure in your country as well as here, it's a hot-button issue, and some people don't want to hear it. And especially because people like President Obama, they say nuclear energy is an answer to global warming.
Well, he's a puppet of the nuclear industry. He took $250,000 from Exelon to be elected. So, and I just need half an hour with Obama. He's a good man. He's highly intelligent. He loves those two daughters. I need to sit down with him as a pediatrician and say, look, Barack, this is what radiation does to children, and talk him through and educate him. I only need half an hour if I could get to him.
Well, let me see if I can help you arrange that. Dr. Helen Caldicott is our guest. We're going to open up the phone lines, I promise, when we get back and answer as many of your questions as we can. Much more to come. Stay with us. We're talking with Dr. Helen Caldicott about the dangers of nuclear power, in particular the threat posed by the Japanese nuclear incident, disaster, debacle, call it what you will, and the threat that continues for all of us. We all have a stake in it, she says. When we come back, the phone lines are full. We'll get to as many of your questions as we can on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to the phones with questions for my guest, Dr. Helen Caldicott. I should mention that listeners have alerted me that, Helen, the bandwidth on your website has been exceeded. I think you probably got a whole bunch of hits all of a sudden, so I hope people will be patient and try back over the next couple hours and next couple of days, because you're not going anywhere, so people will still be able to access the information in the days to come. International line, Al in Vancouver. Good morning, Al.
Yeah, hello. Outstanding show. Disturbing, but outstanding. I have a question. Now, if I understand correctly, during some parts of sleep and during some meditations, the immune system gets into a state of heightened DNA repair. So my question is, can the natural DNA repair capabilities of the immune system be strengthened enough by meditation or perhaps some kind of technology that induces a field in people's bodies? Could it be strengthened enough to counteract radiation to any degree?
No.
To counteract radiation mutation to any degree?
No. The DNA can repair itself, and often does, but when it's been damaged by DNA, by radiation, often the repair is faulty. And it's only the regulatory genes, they're quite complex, if they're damaged, that regulate the rate of cell division and mitosis. If they're damaged, the cell sits latently and quietly for a long time, you know, 2 to 8 years, and then one day it starts dividing. And no, I would say as a physician, it sounds good, but unfortunately it might give you false hope. Not everyone's going to get cancer, let's be frank. And cancer is very common. 30% of people or so get cancer. We can cure some cancers now, particularly with chemotherapy and the like, although that's very traumatic. But we are going to see a huge increase in cancer because of this accident. We're seeing it already in Chernobyl, and it's only 28 years since that accident. And the ground in 40% of Europe is contaminated with radioactive elements and will be so for the next 300 to 1,000 years. I mean, there's plutonium all over the place that lasts for half a million years. So things are grim. And as I said previously, people expect that there's something they can do to fix it. The only way you can fix it is to get off your chairs and your couches, take over the Congress, take over your parliament, stop Canada exporting uranium, stop Australia exporting uranium, stop America building reactors and selling them all over the place to the third world. That's what we've got to do. Use our democracies, and it doesn't work by Twitter or Facebook or computers. It works by putting your body on the line and organizing like we always used to do.
Al, thank you for the call. East of the Rockies, George in Jacksonville, Florida. Good morning, George.
Yes, good morning. Helen, I'm a chemical engineer with a minor in pharmacy, and I work in 13 countries in various industries. My process control experience cuts across industries. And I had problems. Well, my father worked for the Atomic Energy Commission. I had problems with the Japanese in Korea. Loss of face. They made a real mess of a project there. I know the mentality, and I want to suggest five things which will help clean this mess up. But it's a long-term problem, but we can mitigate it to some degree. You've covered the first, which is bypass the water. The second is the most effective way of taking radiation out of water, concentrating it, is chromatography. And I work for a company that produced very large chromatography columns. Normally they're found in laboratories, tiny things, but these
are... Well, is that what the Japanese are using at Fukushima? It's a French mechanism. I can't remember the exact name of it, but those machines keep breaking down all the time. But how does chromatography work, and can it remove the, you know, over 100 isotopes from the water?
Yes, it does. In a laboratory, it's used to detect the individual items, and it does it by absorption of those items within a ceramic structure. You can also just use sand on very large molecules.
And what do you do with then when you've got it?
First it goes in, and then they come out of that porous structure at different rates. So they at the end of the pipe, you can separate it out, and once you separate it out, you really, frankly, have to put it in a desert area or the bottom of the Marianas
Trench. Radioactive waste dump. So how can you handle, you know, hundreds of millions of gallons of water?
The chromatography units can be built in any size.
To handle the ocean, George? To handle the ocean?
No, that is a big problem, a severe problem. And on the other end, and you're a doctor, if... I have an EPFX unit, which is a quantum mechanics unit, which I've been using because we have radiation coming out of the Florida aquifer, I'm seeing much more radiation from the Fukuoka thing here in Florida. And so we
really?
Started a program 6 years ago when we got this unit to take minerals which displace radiation and using chelating agents. And you have hydrangea, algae, and you have to be careful of the source because it can be sourced out of the ocean. And then charcoal, but you have to take the minerals first or body functions will go down. You can have heart attacks and things of that nature. It should be done under the care of a doctor. And of course, the last thing is detection and cleaning things up. And we have been able to reduce our radiation levels, and we saw the beginnings of leukemia in my family, and we've been able to kind of reduce that. But it takes some severe effort, and this is a disaster on a massive scale. We need to, as you said, get control of Congress and the legislatures around the world and actually deal with this problem and not stick our head in the sand.
Well, also, they need education. Let's be frank. Most politicians are scientifically and medically illiterate. Now, they're lawyers and businessmen or whatever. And they need to be educated, and how the hell you educate them is difficult. The only way really to educate people is through the media. The media is determining the fate of the earth, and when people like Murdoch have such control of the media and Fox, you know, and the like, it's difficult. But
frankly, it's on both sides. And I've been a Democrat, I've been a Republican, I have four elected officials in my immediate ancestry. I started political campaigns at age 5, waving from an open car, and there are ways to get through to people. And I'm working with members of Congress right now to show them.
Well, also every person has in their state, they've got 2 senators and they've got their congresspeople. And to use a democracy doesn't mean voting, although in Australia voting is compulsory, and everyone should vote or not live in a democracy. Number one and number two. Every time the congressperson or senator comes back to the district, you make an appointment and you take doctors in white coats and you take people like yourself and educate them.
Right. Well, you do that, but you also get involved in the organizations, both on the left and right, who will replace people in Congress. They really understand when you work to replace them.
Hey, George, thank you for the call. Yeah, you should run. Thank you, George. Appreciate the call. Best of luck to you. West of the Rockies, Randy in Phoenix. Hi, Randy.
Hello, this is Randy. Thank you for listening to me and being on the show. I was to speak at the IAEA conference in Vienna, July 2nd at 1400 hours. So I do know a little bit what I'm saying. I'm going to talk very fast and download a lot of information. First of all, the Japanese are monitoring 1.5 million children for thyroid problems that were in the contaminated area around Fukushima. Everyone.
Can I answer that?
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Everyone has.
They're monitoring up to nearly a million children. They have only got halfway through it, and they're finding thyroid lesions in about 40%. And only a few of them are getting biopsies to find out if these lesions are malignant. So
I was told that it's all of them. They're eventually all just coming up to the peg of getting anomalies. The one reason why it's so contaminated is because in the beginning, they only had readers, or the Geiger counters, to sit there and go up to 100 millisieverts, and they were pegging. To show you how bad it is, 4 weeks ago, 11 workers were working around the tanks, and they got splashed with water from the dams that they built around the tanks because the tanks are leaking. Yep. 6 of them got splashed with 18,000 millisieverts of water.
Well, what is
They're
that in REMS?
3 to 4 days.
What's 18,000 millisieverts in REMS? That's 180 REMS?
Yes. And the tanks are already
really
at 36
dose.
Million millisieverts.
Wow.
Well, that's a lethal dose.
Yeah,
The dose?
And part
the
of
dose?
The problem with the dam, of building the ice dam, is that creates a negative void. And because you have seawater coming in twice with tides a day, that seawater goes in underneath to the cavity of where the, China syndrome is, and then that washes back out to sea.
Yeah.
What's also being dumped out in the ocean, even from the beginning, was not just cesium, but strontium.
Yep. And lots of others.
And then the other thing is that the head of, the head engineer of Fukushima just died 3 weeks
ago. Esophageal cancer, yes.
Yeah. And what they don't tell you about is the 300 workers that they kept in prison when the accident happened, and they sent in troops. The reason why they sent in troops is because some of the workers decided to go home and die, and they couldn't have that. So they sent in troops to keep the people in there, and they were in horrible conditions, eating one bowl of rice a day and getting just two units of bottled water.
Yeah.
And basically, they're gone. The other problem is that the Fukushima, or I should say TEPCO, has just received $1.5 billion in Japanese bonds to start the cleanup, which is not going to be enough.
No, you need half. You need $500 billion.
The other problem is now that where they're going to start building a lot of the facilities there for the Tokyo Olympics on the ground.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
My gosh.
They're dumping incinerated radioactive waste in Tokyo.
They are having a problem. They've already postponed the development because they're trying to find out because the ground became contaminated. A lot of people don't know. Tokyo got radiated four times.
Correct.
Yes.
Areas of Tokyo are highly radioactive.
Yes.
But tell me, what is the IAEA going to do about this?
Stick their head in the sand.
Why?
Well, actually, the IAEA and the Americans did go over last 2 weeks ago because the Japanese government invited them over to look at the problem. And basically, there's really not much you can do. It's so big, it's so disastrous.
Yeah.
And encasing it in concrete would be a good idea, but you got to remove all the debris, and that's highly radioactive. That will take a long time to do. And then where you're going to put it,
get
and then
near
the concrete
it, so
will only last 100 years because
that's
of the radiation, and will just start disintegrating.
Hey, Randy, I appreciate all the info. Seems like you have your finger on the pulse. I would appreciate it if you'd send me an email. Send me an email or contact me, and I'd like to be in touch with you and also put you into contact with Helen so you guys can continue the conversation.
Yes, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, man. That was some good information. Wildcard line, Jocelyn in Wisconsin. Hi, Jocelyn. Good morning.
Hi, good evening, George. Thank you very much for putting up this program. And thank you very much, Dr. Caldicott, because I'm 68 years old, and I just don't see us solving any of our huge problems on this planet that we create ourselves. And how can people that are supposedly so intelligent build reactors on an island that is prone for earthquakes and tsunamis? That is so insane to me. I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but I mean, I heard a long time ago or read that this was a lot worse than Chernobyl. And the detail that you have explained tonight, Doctor, is so excruciatingly
depressing.
Unbelievable, and I'm so disgusted with humanity. I really think that we're headed for, I hate to say this, I just don't see us doing any better. We just don't learn.
Jocelyn, it sounds like Helen isn't ready to give up, though. Helen, you think we can get through this?
Oh, well, look. I'm 75. I've been doing this work for 43 years, and no one's going to stop me. And I still am optimistic because, you know, I believe in the goodness of people, and I know when I give a good lecture to 1,000 people or 5,000 people, I change their lives that night, and off they go and become really active. Often many of them are women, let me say. And it depends upon the drive you have and how much you love your own life and love your children. And you know, I'm sitting here and I can watch kangaroos out my back door and the most beautiful parrots and sea eagles just right here where I am. This, for me, is, I'm a pantheist. This, for me, is my God. And I'm damned if we're going to destroy life in the universe. I once asked Carl Sagan, the great astronomer, did he think there was any other life in the universe? And he paused for a long time and he said no. And I said, why, Carl? And he said, because if other species had reached our stage of development, they would have destroyed themselves. But I know as a doctor that even people who've lived weakened lives on their deathbed or when their children are dying, they'll fall into my arms and weep. and recant and tell me all the wicked things I've done. In other words, that purity and conscience with which they were born is with them till the day they die. People know when they're doing bad things, and they must be called to order on it. And that's what a democracy is about. And we've got to wake that democracy in America up.
Jocelyn, thanks for the call. Anita in New York City, try to get one more call in. Better make it a quick one. Anita, good morning.
Yes. Thank you, George, for this program. And I'm looking for Helen to be a regular part of the Coast family. Also, Helen, thanks for the TSA warning. A friend got cancer stepping into those machines a year later. Briefly, I'm a great lover of salmon. It has excellent health benefits, including mood boosting and sometimes snapper and kingfish. So my question is, can I test the fish? Is the government testing the fish? What are your thoughts in terms of...
That's a very good question, Anita.
Thank you, Anita.
And I'll over the air.
Thanks.
Yeah, the EPA is not testing the fish on the West Coast. It's not testing the ambient air flowing from Fukushima over the North America, nor is it testing the water or the food adequately. So you must demand, and people in New York, you can be very demanding that the EPA get on and routinely test those fish that are being caught every week, all the time, and the food and the water and the air. Because if there is another major release of radiation, if Building 4 collapses or, God help us, something else happens, they have to know what's going on. And therefore, you must demand that your government become responsible. And it will only happen if you do it. One
what
person.
What about your government? Where's your government on nuclear power?
Oh, my government's hopeless. We've got a horrible new prime minister. Just revolting. He's also almost worse than the Tea Party. But anyway, Australians are pretty sensible. I'll wake up and get very cross with him. So, look, it's up to people like us to fix it. And it's not aorta fix it. Aorta syndrome. Not the vessel coming out of the heart. It's like they ought to fix the bridges and they ought to fix the fish. And they ought to, it's I will. If you say I will and you're determined, Anita, you can.
Dr. Helen Caldicott, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I know it's grim news, but and our audience needs to hear it. And I'm glad you were here to tell it to us.
That's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. I hope people will check out your website in the days ahead, not all at once, because it has some bandwidth problems, but there's some interesting papers there. Thanks to Nathan Staton, Gina Salvati, Dan Galante, and our webmaster, Tim Binal. Also, thanks to Oliver Stone and Peter Kuznick, my earlier guests, and talking here about their book, The Untold History of the United States. Good night, everyone. I'll be back next month.